You are listening to the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast, episode 284, The Problem with Owning a Camera Company.
Season 7, episode 284 of the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March the 5th, 2015. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and slicing through everything with just three blades is my brother James Furlow.
Slicing through everything with my three blades? Is this like a Gillette thing, or?
Yeah. Have you not been paying attention to, like, the longest running actors, of a single character, what is it? It's the longest portrayal of a single character by an actor in movie history.
Oh.
His last entry came out this week.
Wolverine! Hi.
Yeah.
I didn't know that he's
exactly
really.
Logan. Yeah.
Which I hear been is awesome. Has to be. I
mean, yeah, pretty good, man.
Wolverine. He was saying, too, if you include his cameos as Wolverine, he's been in 9 movies. I think this is number 9 or number 10 or something. Great, now I've lost count. It's a lot.
I'm going to be totally honest with you, James. I have no idea what you just said because you were breaking up so bad. I couldn't understand you. But
really?
That's okay. I'm just going to assume it was funny.
Well, okay. This is a fantastic start.
I know. This is an important one.
Trying a new headset. Here, let me switch things up.
All right.
Hold on.
This is exciting. So anyways, yeah.
Yeah, you keep talking.
Logan.
I don't know.
I actually didn't get to see Logan this weekend. I was busy doing other stuff, having a life, not enjoying fun things like good movies, but yeah.
Wait, say that last sentence. I'm back. Do I sound any better at all?
Oh, yeah, dramatically.
What?
Yeah.
That's so weird. I was trying a headset.
You're completely in sync now on everything.
What?
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't understand. So a headset, it's a Bluetooth one.
And
so I was connecting to Bluetooth to that headset, and I wonder if my computer was just like, stop.
Maybe, because now
I'm plugged in.
That was the worst experience ever. I was like,
wow.
It's like you just got your bandwidth just went through the roof.
Which means
it's entirely possible that in the like audio recording, everything you just said was like that, or that opening intro was just as bad for everybody listening as it was for me.
Well, I doubt it because my microphone is different. This is where I'm really confused. My microphone is different. That one's plugged in.
Mm.
I'm using my Samson microphone.
That is super weird.
That's why I was like, wait, why did that make a difference? I mean, you sounded like garbage to me in the headset.
Yeah.
I was like, whatever, it's just extra tinny. I'll deal with it. The ability to be mobile. But I don't know why I wanted that, but I was like, I need to have that. Wow, that's really weird. Anyways, Wolverine's coming out. It's awesome, right? You haven't seen it yet?
But
you're going to?
Yeah, probably this week. There's so many movies coming out. It's crazy. There's another round of like good movies coming out. Like right around that. What is it? There's something. It's like this Friday or next Friday, and I'm like, oh, Kong Skull Island is getting into 83%.
No way!
I'm so excited because that movie,
that makes no sense.
That movie looks like the sort of movie I'd go to. I'm like, I know it's bad. I'm okay with the fact that it's bad. I'm still gonna go and watch it. The fact that it's
it's that one character, that relief character. I don't know his name. He's in the Talladega Nights.
He's like my favorite. John C. Reilly.
Yeah, he just looks funny
in
that show.
Well, I like.
When I said it out loud, that name sounds pretty dumb.
Yeah. I like the tone. I like whatever they're doing with it. One of the things that I like about it is the fact that it technically happens in the same universe as the most recent Godzilla movie. So the whole like, the idea that they're building up towards is having a King Kong versus Godzilla duel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It should be great. Very excited about that in the next couple of years. should be as dumb and exciting as it sounds.
Yeah, totally.
And then you say, and then like a week later, we got the other beast with the beauty.
Yeah, with the beauty.
Oh man!
And we just got off of Batman of Legos.
Batman.
So
yeah,
it's a good time. It's a, yeah, it's a good time to like movies.
It's early year stuff. And then we get like then we have a bit of a drought. Before we get around to the
summer awesome.
Yeah, which this summer, oh man, it's gonna be another good year of busters of blocks, James.
Busters of blocks, man, I love those.
I know.
Yeah, and I'm gonna miss them all. It's so exciting.
I know. I'm gonna tell you about them and tell you, yeah, you're missing out.
I've talked to Jesse into getting a babysitter for. The Beautiful Beast.
Okay.
Because I'm like, we should probably go watch that one in theaters because I feel like the Be Our Guest scene will be amazing in theaters. And then I'm like, I don't know how I feel about the rest of it. But, man, I would love to watch. Oh. I'd love to watch Logan.
No.
I like it. He's just good. They were asking him why it was his last one on one of the talk shows. And he was like, well, because I was talking to my friend, Jerry Seinfeld. And they're like, wait, you're friends with Jerry Seinfeld? That's awesome. And just kind of like, when did you decide to quit Seinfeld? And Jerry was like, well, it's not when you're at the top. Like, that's not what he's advocating for. But he's like, but you want to quit before you're dry of your creative juices. Mm. So you've peaked. You're on your decline, perhaps. It's like, that's a great time to do it. Don't just totally suck yourself dry. Be known for something else and move on. And so he was like, so he decided that 3 years ago, by the way.
Yeah.
And did one other movie in between, but has been working on Logan for a while, and I hear it's great.
The rumor is he's still got it in his contract for one more.
Oh.
But one more X-Men movie, and he's basically said, I'm not going to do Wolverine anymore. I'm not going to be it.
What?
But this is the tricky part. And there's like, from a timeline universe sharing perspective, it's like impossible for this to actually happen. But thankfully, there's no consistency in any of the canon in these movies. So they're like, yeah, what's his name? Not Ryan Gosling, the other pretty one that everybody's into. doing it again this week. What's his name? What's his name?
Pretty Ryan? Ryan?
Ryan.
His first name?
Yeah. Ryan Reynolds. There we go.
Pretty one. Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds really, really, really wants to have Wolverine in one of the Deadpool movies. And so it's like contractually it's possible. And
if they got him to do a cameo,
that's what they're talking.
That'd be cool.
It wouldn't be much, but it would be because I mean, at this point, yeah, he's made such a big deal about it. It's be good. It'd be good. I'd appreciate that. It's possibly not his actual last time reprising the role, but it's like the last one he's a major, like, primary character in.
Yeah, and maybe that's what he means. He's just not saying it because who cares about nuance?
Right, exactly. Well, and it's one of those things where it's like he has been technically, like, by almost any measure, he's been the main character of every major X-Men movie, with the exception of First Class and Deadpool. If he were to do Deadpool, he could even do a 15-minute like scene and still not be the main character.
They get into a fight.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be fun. And
oh, that'd be so good.
But I mean, it's funny, like, you think about, like, he wasn't in First Class, but he also had probably one of the best scenes in the entire movie. And he said one word, or two words, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That's what's so great about some of these longer narrative ones, because there's so much context already built around it. That's all he has to say, and you go, yep.
Yeah. Especially something like that, where it's like, the context of that scene would make absolutely no sense in so many ways, unless you've got a lot of narrative. Just, Anyway, yeah, we're not going to get into it. You want to know why, James? Because there's so much to talk about this week. And this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, their initial public offerings, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, yes. James got a short disclosure he wants to throw your way.
I founded and work for HPI, which is a publicly traded company. I think it's actually HPQ is the stock ticker. But I don't represent HPI or any of their opinions. I also own a Snap competitor that is Twitter.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure because you share moments back and forth and little snippets of time.
No.
It happens to just last forever.
Does Twitter make cameras?
You can upload photos, so what does that mean?
No, but are they a camera company? Because if they're not a camera company, they're not competing.
They capture snapshots in time.
Yes, but I don't think you understand my question. Are they a camera company?
Oh. Maybe. They have Periscope that takes video using the camera. Does that count?
Well, video
camera?
It doesn't really matter what you make or what you sell or what kind of product you develop. It's kind of what you call yourself that's important.
Oh,
so if they don't call themselves a camera company, well, then they're not a camera company. But if they did, well, then they'd be a camera company.
I don't think they call themselves a camera company.
So they're not
even though they have video and photo products.
Then they're absolutely not competitors. They're not even in the same.
Some would say are just features as opposed to the core of your company.
Right. They're not even in the same ballpark of companies. It's just.
It's really just table stakes. If you don't do that, you're not even a company, really.
Oh, no. Jeez.
Anyways, I also own part of Etsy.
I'm so ready for it today.
this should be good.
And, if you want to follow us throughout the week, actually, I do have a statement to throw in really quickly here before we get into this part. I don't want to say that 3D printers are the best thing ever. Because my girlfriend listens to the show. I don't want to draw any comparisons. But
Fair enough.
It is so awesome having a 3D printer and just being able to... I'm printing like crazy. So at this point, I'm a full-on...
What have you made?
Okay, so...
Show us something. Show me something.
This is gonna
I'll describe it to them.
This is going to be...
It's white, folks.
This is...
Actually, no, it's not white.
Wrong camera. It looks...
Okay, it looks like a poker chip with a hole in the middle.
It looks like a wheel, but this is the thing. It is an omnidirectional wheel. And what it basically happens is, on the edge here, there are little rollers that roll perpendicularly to the main axis.
So you have the main wheel, and then there's little wheels on...
The sides.
The main wheel.
Yeah, on the edge of the main
wheel.
So as it rolls along this way... It can also roll forward and backwards.
Whoa.
You cannot buy something like... You might, if you know a lot about these, you look at them like, oh, you can buy those for cheap online. Why would you buy that yourself? You cannot buy these online. This has got a ton of bearings in it. So it's just... It's smooth as butter, James. It's smooth as butter. I love it. It's so much fun just to be able to do this. It's... Ugh. Whatever. I'm loving having a 3D printer. So glad I made that. I took the plunge.
Cool.
So, anyways, if you want to follow me throughout the week, and
are you posting any of the photos of these things you're creating?
I have to start because I
dude, take a picture of that wheel, throw it on Instagram. Give people an opportunity to or a reason to go check it out.
Will do. If you want to follow me on Instagram, my Instagram, check it out. It's nextwiggin4, NEXTWIGGI. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Matthew D. Furlow. I ain't gonna Snapchat it to you. Just not gonna happen. Sorry, I don't care.
I'm James Furlow everywhere.
Awesome. And then we also got the furlowbros.com domain. It links to a server that hosts our HTML website. And if you want to not through the East Coast,
That may not be true.
Wait, what?
Because we use S3 to host all of our actual podcast files.
Yeah, but we're on the West Coast, so we were okay.
Oh, so we're good.
Yeah, so all right. It was only if you were hosted anything on the East Coast. So you should.
So we were up all week.
We've been up all week. Things got a little bit hectic there, but we'll get into it later. If you do want to check that out, what we got there is going to have a link to all the articles and everything we talk about tonight. So we're going to be moving pretty fast because there's a lot going on. And if you want to get a little more in depth, go in furloughbros.com. If you want that every week, but you don't like typing in furloughbros.com, we get it. We'll actually just deliver that to your email address if you sign up for our weekly newsletter. It's a great little synopsis of this week in tech. So, yeah, pretty awesome.
So, I actually want to start this off. Oh, remind me, I don't know, in an hour. I want to start this off with talking about things that were ephemeral. Okay.
Okay.
Specifically, I want to talk about the top 10 services that Google killed. I don't know why they decided that this was a good week to talk about it. They must have killed something and I missed it. But they were like, let's talk about this. So number 10, Google Buzz. Do you remember Google Buzz?
Yes.
Oh, dude, that was the future. And for like 3 months, and people were like, this is horrible.
Google
killed it pretty quick.
Google Buzz is the reason that they killed Reader. Because the team at Reader had succeeded at doing what Buzz was trying to do. And since Buzz was a complete failure, they took the Reader team and turned them into the Google Plus team, or brought them into the Google Plus team, because Google Buzz was such a catastrophic failure.
Okay, good to know. Number 9 is Picnic. I don't remember if you remember that, but it was a free online editing tool. Not that big of a deal. But Picasa is number 8 on their list. Do you ever use Picasa? I did.
No.
They had this really good way of, like, their screensaver was just really cool. I liked it. And they ultimately killed it. Number 7, Google Answers.
So, like,
their whole thing was, like, they actually pay you money if you gave a good answer to questions. Brilliant idea, but turns out you don't have to. And now we've got Quora and Stack Exchange, which is really good, and Yahoo Answers. So, it's okay. Google Wave. That was a product that like had just a shocking amount of hype, and it was described as so much potential, no one knew what to do with it.
Well, and actually, one of the important things to remember about it is that the core technology that they were developing, why it was so exciting, was that as you typed, those characters would show up on every, as you typed on every document everywhere. Which was a pretty radical new technology to be able to send tiny packets of information quick enough where you could have collaborative editing character by character. And everybody thought that was really crazy. And they're like, oh, this is the best new thing. And then they killed Wave and they never did anything with that product. Oh, wait, they took that core technology and they baked it into literally every Google service. So
yeah, that's
Wave
true.
Is still with us. There's just, it was a beta test for a new library of jQuery technologies, basically.
Yeah, I like the they described it as the email, instant messenger, document collaborating, wiki, forum, blogging tool.
Yep. It was weird.
That's about right. And they said now it's like, essentially it was the predecessor to like Slack and Google Drive and Dropbox and Office and like, it did them all. Which now that I'm, it's funny, I'm going back rereading it. I'm working on a couple projects. I'm like, man, that would be a really nice I actually have a use case for it today. Google Helpouts. I don't know if you actually knew about this one.
I didn't.
But it was a service where you could contact live experts for video chats to help you with whatever your problem was. Like if you were trying to fix something in your house, they had one specifically for general contracting and home inspections, apparently.
So it was like a person-driven Google search.
Google Notebook was the next one. I used to store my passwords in there for a while. And then I switched. Now I'm in LastPass. Don't hack me. Number 3 was Google Labs. Remember they actually had a specific section if you would go like the Google, like the service thing, go to all. They actually had a Google Labs where they're doing all sorts of experimental stuff. That's Dunsky now. And then number 2 was iGoogle.
I do remember iGoogle.
It was like
your homepage for the internet or something.
Personalized homepage. Yeah. Man, it's sad. And we all know what number 1 is. Google Reader.
I cannot believe they sacrificed Google Reader at the altar of Google Plus. It just, that's such a painful reality. Oh man, what a poor payoff. Well, I mean, except Google got done exactly what they wanted to get done, which was to unify all of their logins across all of their different platforms and connect that to personal information about every single one of their users. That way, they could. Well, you didn't, and obviously, you don't do that anymore. But now they know enough where it's fine. They got to. They Google Plus allowed them to. What's the word I'm looking for? It allowed them to take a bunch of unstructured data and turn it into structured data about you and who you are and how you use all their services. And now you're stuck. They already know everything. And yep, is what it is. That's what they bought by killing Reader.
Well, they won, I guess.
They did.
Feedly's not bad.
I like Feedly. Feedly's a great little service. And honestly, their app, their iOS app, is actually quite solid. It took them, I'd say, a year and a half to get it to the point where it was like really, really usable. But at this point, I find it completely satisfactory. But you know what, James?
Do you pay the? Nah, yeah, me neither.
I find it.
Sometimes I think about it because I'm like, you know, it'd be nice to support them.
Yeah, and there looks like some features that would be kind of nice. Especially we go through so many articles a week that it's like it can get really unwieldy, and that's where the paid account actually comes in handy, is organizing like really dense feeds in a useful way. But the next battery revolution got announced this week, and it's being brought to us courtesy of the guy responsible for the last one, which is pretty exciting. It's got a little bit of a breakthrough in battery technology is announced pretty much every week, and I never bring it to you because it's almost always by charlatans or, you know, incapable people. This is a dude who. He's got his bona fides. His name is Dr. Goodenough, which is a great name for an engineer. and he was the guy who was credited with developing the lithium-ion battery. So kind of a big deal in that space.
He is old.
Yeah, he's old as hell. He's 95 years young. But he's,
you know, I roomed with the guy in college. The last name was Goodenough.
That's awesome. How often did you make puns using his last name?
As often as I could.
Exactly. yeah, it's awesome.
Never got old to me.
So he's he works for University of Texas at Austin, and he's in charge of the chunk of the department, and they were doing a research project, and they developed what they're calling a glass. Oh, geez. Where's the word? But it's a solid-state battery, and it's safer than lithium-ion. It stores as much energy. Here we go. It stores three times as much energy, which means more miles for electric cars in between charges. When you do need to charge, it can be done in minutes instead of hours. Plus, it can withstand the greater charge. Greater numbers of charge and discharge cycles. So with a battery, you have capacity, how many electrons can it hold. You have charging times, which is how long does it take to fill it up with electrons. And then you have cycle life cycle. So it's how many times can you charge and discharge it. And this new technology beats lithium-ion batteries in every single one of those cases.
Wow.
Yeah, the team is...
By how much?
Well, it's got like three times the energy density. So the same size batteries in a Tesla would get you three times the mileage, which would mean...
That's huge.
Yes. Yeah, that's enormous. And
Elon's going to be upset that he already built his Gigafactory.
I have a feeling that it'll help him nonetheless. So one of the big deals is also one of the reasons why this is possible is because they're using a glass electrolysis instead of a liquid like lithium ion does. So liquid, like so, in lithium ion batteries, there's like a gel they call a liquid that goes through the that it's all flexible and stuff. And as you charge it, the lithium ions will actually build up and they'll build these little tendrils that can cause short circuits, which can be very dangerous. It can also just damage the lifespan of the battery and make it not as good. and it's got a lot of weaknesses in that technology. So they've come up with a new form where they're using a piece of solid glass, and it just really improves the overall performance of the battery. It also can survive temperatures as low as negative 20 degrees Celsius or -4 degrees Fahrenheit, which is huge for electric cars, because being able to drive around in the snow is something that they really can't do very well right now. In order to do that, they basically have to turn on heaters over the batteries to keep the batteries warm. And so, even if this is the only thing that it does, it would be huge. But the biggest deal here, in my opinion, is that they're not using a lithium atoms in order to hold the charge. They're using sodium atoms. And why that's a big deal is because, like, a gram of lithium costs, like, $6,000. A gram of pure sodium costs, like, $300. The scale of price for the lithium versus sodium, because sodium can be found in salt water. You have to go through electrolysis and separate the sodium from the that other stuff, and the NaCl, the chlorine, and then you're off to the races. Whereas with lithium, it's a rare earth metal; it's hard to find. So this is a big deal. This is a real big deal. There is one hurdle that could be a complete stumbling block to this whole shebang.
Okay,
which is manufacturability. Department is basically saying now that that's not going to be a hurdle, but until it actually happens, you just don't know. You actually have to build at scale before you can know if you can build at scale, sort of a thing. Huh. But I will say this, if anybody has the credibility to say, yeah, it's not that big of a deal, good enough is. And so it's really, really, this is probably the most promising battery breakthrough we've had in the last 5 years. And if not longer.
Dang.
It's pretty big. And even if it never gets, even if it never gets down to the level of cell phones, because cell phones are so disposable, if it turns out to be more expensive to manufacture them than lithium ion batteries, then we might just stick with lithium ion in your average cell phone, except for the super high end stuff that size is a premium. Yeah. So that Apple can make it 2 millimeters thinner.
Because they will.
Yeah, but where this is huge is obviously cars, because your capacity for range is gigantic. But also in big capital manufacturing, things like battery backups for solar power and stuff like that. So this has got some serious potential. So we'll keep an eye on it. Don't you worry, cool. Everybody. Yeah. All right. So now that I've said something that was good for the world, let's get angry, James.
All right. So Snapchat went public this month. March 1st, I believe.
Yeah, Thursday.
So they sold their, I don't know how you want to say it. Snapchat sold stocks at $17 per share, and then it began trading at $24 per share. So that's what you and I could buy it at.
Right, because what they did,
$24.
This took me a little while to understand how this works, but basically what happens is Snapchat doesn't actually sell shares on the New York Stock Exchange. The investment banks too. I don't know why that is, but that is what it is. So basically,
you're good negotiators from a long time ago.
Yeah. So the giant investment banks, what they do is they buy, they underwrite is what it's called, but they literally buy the stocks from Snapchat and then turn around. So Snapchat just gets $3 billion from the, Goldman Sachs and Bear Stearns and not Lehman Brothers, but companies like that. And then they turn around and sell those shares on the open market at a bit of a markup. And apparently
40% markup.
They all ran away with between like $10 and $100 million for an afternoon's work.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of work running up to it.
Yeah.
You had to fill out paperwork and
stuff. Yes.
By the way, the
value added stuff.
Yeah, the Google Finance description is Snap Inc., formerly Snapchat Inc., is a camera company, period.
Yep.
The company's flagship product, Snapchat, is a camera application that helps people to communicate through short videos and images known as a snap.
Yep.
Offers three ways for people to make a snap. This is interesting, actually. Snapchat application, publisher's tools that help its partners to create publisher stories, and spectacles, its sunglasses that make snaps. Snaps are viewed primarily through the Snapchat application, primarily. Oh, but can also be embedded on the web or on television in certain circumstances. Hmm. Interesting.
So, yeah, it was,
So they popped up. It looks like they started at 24. They got as high as, looks like 29.
Yeah.
And now they're back at 27.
Yeah, they settled at 27 was the big, the value. Yeah, so obviously Snap Inc. is a
camera company. They're worth almost $35 billion.
Yeah, so, this is a great time to bring this up. So nine companies that Snap is already more valuable than. We'll start right at the punch in the gut. They are more valuable than Twitter.
Yes, they are.
By a long shot. And
because Twitter's only like 11, right?
Yep.
Yeah, 11.2.
They are more valuable than Ferrari, the car company, which kind of,
Totally surprised. Ferrari makes more money than they do.
Yeah, a lot more. They are more valuable than Best Buy, who also makes more money. They're more valuable than Seagate. They're more valuable than Hershey's. They're more valuable than Viacom. That one can't feel good for Viacom. They're more valuable than, because I would say, they're more valuable than Hilton, the hoteliers.
Hotel. I've stayed there.
Me too. They're more valuable than United Continental and American Airlines. So
wow,
I know. I'm not sure what any of that means. It's just sort of gives you a scale of how valuable the market thinks Snapchat is.
Thinks that they are, and it's important to note that every single one of those, except for maybe Twitter, I'll have to look this up, made more money than Snap.
Yeah.
Last quarter. Let's see. This will be telling here. Finance.google.com. If we go to Twitter, TWTR, by the way, and we look at their financials, because I cannot help myself. Income statement. Let's see how much they lost. What am I looking at? 3 months. So last quarter, they lost less money than Snapchat. They only lost $167 million. So
Snapchat!
Every single one of them.
Snapchat is still growing, James. Come on. When you're growing as quickly as they're growing at their ever-increasing growth rate, and by ever-increasing, I mean slowing, it costs a lot of money to keep that base up.
Actually, I take that back. Snap only lost 170, so it's not half a million or a billion like everyone was talking about.
Where'd that half a billion come from then? Or was it last year?
I don't know.
Must have been last year.
Yeah. Let's see. Annual data. Yeah, annual data was half a billion.
Gotcha. All right. That makes more sense. Yeah. So we've talked about the fact that Snapchat is a camera company. They're really, really
they're calling themselves a camera
really
company.
Really emphatic about that. So this is the thing. The fact that they're a camera
company. You don't want to be called a social network. That's trouble.
That is trouble. See, the problem is that, you know, there's one other major tech company who's also a camera company that's struggling a little bit in a couple of different ways, and I think it's quite telling as what it means to be a camera company. But GoPro is a camera company. And the reason why this is, I think it's...
So they are.
I think it's fair to draw this conclusion because it's like, obviously, Snapchat's a social network and it's stupid to call it a camera app. Even though, yes, I get that the primary interface is through the camera module on your iPhone or Android, but it's people don't use it because it's so much fun to take pictures or because it's, like, people use it because of the social interaction.
See, I prefer Facebook. So, like, Facebook Inc. is focused on building products that enable people to connect and share through mobile devices, personal computers, and other surfaces. You know, it's they're more like, here's what we do.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's more descriptive of what they actually are. But
well, I
maybe they're not as cool.
I just... It's funny.
We all thought Mark Zuckerberg was a punk, and he matured and grew up, and seems to be doing okay now.
I think they're different people. I think the talent level is just completely different. The emphasis of the company is completely different. One of the things that everybody keeps going to with Evan Spiegel is how cool he is and how he gets cool in a way that Mark Zuckerberg doesn't. And I'm like, okay, that seems from the outside to be kind of a valid commentary on the difference between Mark Zuckerberg and him. But the problem is that all of the other major tech CEOs with hugely successful companies, whether it's Microsoft, Apple, Google, Facebook, whatever, they don't ever call those CEOs cool. Nobody called Steve Jobs cool. They called them visionaries, but not cool. Actually, he was particularly uncool in his black turtleneck and jeans. It was kind of a joke in how uncool it was. Like, he just wore it so well. He wore it like so aggressively that you're kind of like, I don't want to make fun of him for looking like a dad in like every day wearing the same thing, but that's the dorkiest thing you can do, man. It's funny because I've been listening all week to people like pumping up Evan Spiegel and just like pumping up the company and everything about it, and I've just been hit again and again by these analogies and these comparisons, and I'm like, or these compliments that all come across as underhanded compliments, and like you sit there and you go, okay, so Snap Inc. decided to sell spectacles. They went through a couple of other product categories that they were thinking about building instead of the spectacles while they were in the process. One of which was a 360 camera, which everybody sells a 360 camera right now. I mean, like, everybody sells one. And nobody's selling them in mass. Now, that could have been something where they could have a difference that could make a difference, right? Because there's an opportunity to have a product that's not necessarily any more technically capable than everybody else's, but rises above just because you've got the cool name factor and you manage to get the word out on it. The problem is that it takes a tremendous amount of computation to stitch together a 3D image right now. It's like nobody's figured out how to make a cheap 360 camera. They all cost hundreds of dollars, and not like two hundreds of dollars, but like $500 and $600. And Snap just couldn't figure out how to engineer that. Even though I would argue that they might have actually been able to do a little bit of business in that area, but I think I come back to my core complaint with Snapchat, which has always been, they're not a great technology company. They're not great engineers. They're good at a lot of other stuff, but they're not good at the sort of things that allow Google and Facebook and Apple and Microsoft to do those sorts of projects. And then the other one that they looked into was a drone. And hopefully what they looked at is they looked across the ocean at DJI and were like, yeah, we're never going to – or you know what? We concede. Because and the thing is that these are all products that that compare directly to GoPro's struggling market. Like, GoPro is the camera company that Snapchat is like wants to evolve into, I guess. Except, like, we're proving right now there's not really a market for whatever GoPro is. And GoPro is like the greatest part about GoPro is the fact that the action camera category, everybody calls a GoPro. Like, the fact they've got the name recognition in a way that like Kleenex has like couldn't have paid more for. Like, they did a great job of branding that, and they can't survive in that market, even though they've got a brand that is just stellar. And I just
I have a question.
What?
For hooking up a camera via Bluetooth to a phone, is that hard to do? Like, one of GoPro's biggest problems is that there's a ton of competitors out there. Like, you got all those Chinese knockoffs, and everyone goes, they're good enough.
Yes.
I don't have to spend the premium for the GoPro. Is that hard to do? Like, could I, Facebook, whoever, could I be Facebook? Could I hire a third-party company to make some OEM glasses that connect via Bluetooth? I'm guessing that's how they connect. And then be able to access those?
It's a piece of cake. Technically, it's a piece of cake. The real challenge with it is it's a bandwidth problem. So it's like, the reason why Snapchat's product actually works is because it records the video and then over a much longer period of time loads the video to your camera over Bluetooth.
Right.
It's because they're short clips taken infrequently that it works. So a much more challenging product that people would actually that Snapchat would ideally grow into would be something that could stream continuously, but that would
live video.
But that would require a Wi-Fi connection that could actually handle the bandwidth of a separate, which introduces a whole host of technology problems. It's a unique thing in that it's like it is the one it's the one simple one that they could take on from a technology perspective, and that their product was like uniquely suited for, but it just doesn't appear to have any legs. You know, people aren't going to be buying spectacles for Christmas. So, or you know,
you don't know that.
Yeah, we do, James.
Christmas is a long ways from now.
Yeah, well, and that's the problem, honestly, is it's by the time we get around there, who knows what VR stuff or AR stuff is going to be out there. And, you know, Apple will have launched the iPhone 8 with whatever AR technology that they're going to be embedding into it. Like, spectacles is going to seem so old, so tired in 7 months. It's going to be ridiculous. The technology is moving way too fast. So unless they got another product, you know, coming down the pipeline that can do augmented reality, then that's just going to be a pathetic little like footnote in 2016.
But they're always with you.
Yeah, I know. But
capturing the moment so you don't have to step outside.
And a company that, you know, they managed to put a Bluetooth, they managed to put a cheap camera module and a Bluetooth antenna with a battery pack into a pair of glasses. You know, I'm not saying that's nothing. It takes a little bit of creativity to do that. It's just, you know, they didn't build a drone because they can't build a drone. If GoPro can't do it, Snap can't do it. They didn't build a 360 camera because they can't build a 360 camera because it's really hard and nobody's been able to figure out how to do it for less than $200 in a way that is worth anything. Another piece of this coolness of Snapchat, they're so cool, it was a question somebody wrote this week. It was, when's Snap going to finally get into music? Because,
you know, because music is cool.
Music is cool. And it's this really long article that I thought was hilarious. And they were talking about how, like, one of the reasons why MySpace succeeded, which, again, seems like an underhanded compliment.
How would you say they succeeded?
I know.
In the short term?
Maybe? Yeah. Well, there was a couple other, like,
MySpace doesn't exist anymore.
I know. There were,
right?
There were a couple other.
Right?
Well, no, you can tell. MySpace still exists. Just nobody uses it.
MySpace.com.
Hey, it'll bump
Where
up.
Does this take me?
I think I could even log in if I wanted to.
Wow, it's still a website.
Hmm. Huh.
And I get a big thing saying, this requires Adobe Flash Player plugin. Please download it. Big red banner. That's inviting.
So, yeah, and the idea...
MySpace.
Let's say,
who would have guessed?
Well, hey, it's Snapchat's silver lining, you know? This, at least we can be like them one day. And the thing is it's like Snapchat, or no, sorry, MySpace really separated themselves from the other social networks at the time because they had like an understanding of the music scene that allowed them
yes.
to, they, it was a big differentiator and it was something that
people. And Facebook still hasn't figured that out and has decided they don't need to, which is fine.
Right, exactly. And one of the things that they were talking about is that, you know, Evan Spiegel is a cool dude. He gets how to make things cool and he is really into music. He's a big music lover. And he is in an area where there's a really big music scene. This article, as
you know, all they have to do is be more friendly to content creators and artists, and that would be a huge deal.
Right, exactly.
That's all they have to do, but they refuse to.
Well, no, see, that's not the problem, James. The problem is that the music industry is terrified of tech companies because of the likes of Apple Apple and iTunes. Like, they got so, they didn't know what to do when Napster came along, and it took them so long to figure it out that finally, like, what seemed like the answer was Apple, and they, you know, signed their soul to the devil as far as they're concerned by allowing Apple to sell single songs for 99 cents. And that started, in their opinion, the spiral. And they're very, very cautious about tech companies, especially tech startups, that want to leverage music for their own personal benefit. I mean, that was one of the big, like, Groove Shark. That was the big thing with Groove Shark. You know, even the big, you know, back and forth with Taylor Swift and Spotify, that was her problem, was that you're taking advantage of artists for your own gain. You're not paying us what we deserve, and you're not taking in enough money to pay us enough money, but you don't care as long as you keep expanding. That's all you really care about. And the thing is that what it's proven is that being cool and understanding music doesn't mean anything. What means something is being able to build a relationship with the music executives in such a way that you can build these expansive platforms and really get into a new market. Again, making me wonder what the heck is going on in making Snapchat so valuable. There's all these different markets that they seem like they should be able to fit into relatively easily, but they don't actually have the technical or business skill to grow there. And any place where they show any signs of success, everybody else in the space, you know, comes in as quickly as possible. If you're trying to tell me that if they tried to expand into music and make, you know, convenient for music content creators to come in and share their music, like, yeah, that would be great. But right now, Spotify has a bigger audience. Spotify would just come in and be like, oh, you can use those same tools to put it on our platform and we have a bigger audience. You know, Or I don't know. Well, then it's fine. It is, you know, it's not a bad place to be in this, like, in this space where you're the leader. That does not mean you will be the winner. And we had a text thread going back and forth with you, me, and our mom earlier this week, where she shared an article with us that was about Twitter and how, like, you know, people are trying to decide, is Snapchat Twitter or is it Facebook? and how that's sort of a false choice because there's all sorts of other things that it could be. But if you're going to force yourself to choose which one of it is, this article argued towards the idea that, no, it's more of a Facebook. Because you look at Twitter and it's like, it's not really much of an innovator. I'm like, what are you talking about? Twitter's a huge innovator. The problem was is that every time they innovated anything, yeah. Facebook would come in and sweep it. I mean, the status update on Facebook is a Twitter knockoff. Like, that was the whole point of it was, oh, Twitter's succeeding. Steal their product. You know, and what is Facebook Live? It's a Periscope knockoff, which is a Twitter product. Like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills here. And what I realize is that there was $3 billion on the line on Thursday that everybody was going to get a small cut of, whether you were the big banks, whether you're the exchange guys or Snapchat. Everybody was hugely financially motivated to get the word out there that, hey, we're a big deal. Everybody's going to make a lot of money. Buy in.
Totally.
Which makes me feel like what we end up with is this place where, you know, the only people that lost was NBC, who bought $500 million worth of non-voting stock in a camera company. And inexplicably, like, what was the point of doing that, guys? All the investors made a ton of money this weekend. And, you know,
the ones who sold did.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
We'll see. They'll be fine until the next quarter results.
Yeah.
And if they don't show signs of improvement, it's going to be a bloodbath.
I know, which I'm...
I know.
I was going to say, you know what's happened, James? I gave up on BlackBerry. For years...
They came up with a new phone. They didn't come up with a new phone this week. They licensed a company that made a new phone that runs Android that they called a BlackBerry phone this week.
It's a boutique security software firm in Canada. They're, you know, it's...
With a keyboard.
Yeah. And they licensed it. They're running on nostalgia, just like the Nokia brand being built by a company other than
and
Nokia.
And for some reason, you use Uber, so you're unwilling to make them your whipping horse. And so Snap gets your full fury.
I don't know. Uber's an interesting beast, man.
They're more cringeworthy than make me angry.
Yeah. Well, there's
maybe it's like everybody knows.
Well, yeah, they are so bold in their breaking of the rules and their just cutthroat nature, and they're just like I don't even want to say I respect it so as much as I fear it a little bit, and I'm like, oh, you guys are. I don't know. You guys really are like this. This is scary. You just. Oh man, you're trying to get it out of me. I can already tell. There was an article this week where they were they built a tool that allows them to keep track of and circumvent authorities who are trying to track and make sure they're following the rules. Which is just coming out. Uber, what a great company. They're just class act all up and down. But, yeah. Saying the worst part about this is that it's like, you know, Snapchat is like, it is what it is. It's this one little company. If things, like you said, if things don't turn around, it's going to be a bloodbath in the next quarter. Or it'll end up like Twitter and just sort of be middling for years and years and years, which I think is the most likely scenario. And Evan Spiegel gets to be a billionaire for the rest of his life. So, you know, congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah. Worse.
They sold, like, I think it was like $125 million worth of stock or something like that. So,
yeah. But
they made it. I was reading an article today that it was talking about real estate investing, and they were like, that's not the way to do it. The way to build wealth is to start up a company and like use the company proceeds to buy real estate. And they're like, that's how you get wealthy is by creating a company.
Yep.
So that's what they did.
Yeah, you know, and it's like
they created a camera company.
Yeah. I mean, say the thing that's actually disconcerting is the fact that it's like they've now set the precedent that you can if you're a big enough deal, you can IPO with non-voting stock. And
Yep.
And there are some serious...
Well, we'll see. we'll see. Because if things don't go well for them, then that won't happen again.
Yeah.
But if they continue to grow and the stock goes up and they are profitable and succeed as a company, okay, yeah, it's been proven.
Yeah. There's a you're correct. There's a couple of watchdog groups that are worried because in the concern here is that how do you get what forces a company to a publicly traded company to be transparent about stuff? Like Apple doesn't say how many watches they've sold, right? And they're not in conflict of any transparency rules, because they tell you how much money they made on Apple watches as part of a large chunk of different products that all fit into one category. And they tell you that the reason why they don't want to say anything is because it's of competitive advantages, and which, you know, maybe that's real or not, but whatever the case is, they're able to hide that particular number from their investors and literally everybody. There are the things they can't hide, like executive compensation. Executive compensation has to be approved by your board. What was that called?
Borderline?
No, the people who not
your board,
Yeah, it's just the board.
No, there's a word for it.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. It's the board is the short term.
Right.
Shorthand. Not board of advisors. Board of...
Might be that. But the point is... governors. I want that. But the point is, like, they have to approve executive compensation.
Board member?
Board members, yeah. Whatever. They have to, like, approve executive compensation, but there's nothing stating that you legally have to disclose what your executive compensation is. And so as an investor, it's entirely possible for Snapchat to just be like, no, our total executive compensation is X, and not break it out to the individual leaders and who's making what. And there are questions like, for the longest time, if you own a voting share, you have two possible things you can do. You can either sell your stock because you don't like that sort of activity, or you can bring something up for a vote and say, no, you have to tell us. We own your company. You work for us. and you can force the company to say that. So Apple's investors could force them to force the company, the CEO, to tell the world how many Apple Watches they've sold, except that the investors have all decided, no, that seems reasonable to us. We won't make you do it.
Yeah.
And in this case, because there is no, Snapchat just took that lever away from their...
Well, I mean, and it's not even like, I mean, that's not the big one, right? I mean, the big one is your CEO is messing up.
Yeah.
And they have an opportunity to say, you're not running the company I own well.
Right.
I will fire you as the owner of this company.
Right.
So, and they essentially have taken that away.
Yeah, they've changed the relationship of the investor, the owner, and the employees, the CEO, in a way that...
Like turned them into silent partners, essentially.
Yeah, and it's in a way that our economy's never had to deal with. Now, it might be fine, but it might not be fine. And it's...
As long as they continue to grow and break records and things like that, it will be fine.
Well, and I sit there and I go, I'm not even...
Companies don't tend to do that.
I'm
going to say,
I'm not worried about Snap being... my thing is, what I don't like about it is that it's not even that Snap is going to be the one that it does something wrong. To me, it's what about the next guys? You've now set the precedence that this is something that's within the realm of things that a company can do. And,
yep.
You know, I don't like it. I don't like it.
Feels icky.
They're bad blokes, those Snapchatters. Anyways.
Spunk 26-year-old punks, that's what they are.
Yeah, that's fine. Super rich 26-year-old punks.
They create a valuable product and service.
Do they?
They're a camera.
Because as far as I can tell, their product actually loses money every quarter. So
it's valuable to the users.
Mm.
who I was reading something. It was the case for the case that Snapchat really is worth $33 billion. It was on Vox, which, man, I see spectacles on normal people outside of their marketing campaign.
Oh, yeah.
They look so
when they're cool. When they're not on models, they look terrible.
And it's, well, it's, if it's, and if it's face on, like perfectly, like the camera's right in front of the person, it's okay. I'm still like, I don't know, but it's okay. But man, the second you change the angle just a little bit, that's where I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, now I know. I don't know. Anyways, they were kind of saying, like, how is this? How is it? And I loved the first one. It said, the Snap is pioneering a new medium. And I thought this was interesting. It says, Snap is a camera company. It said, this is an oddly analog way of saying that it's a company built around the new medium of smartphone-based images, video, and interactive content. I love one of their distinctive strategy things is they don't have a web version.
Yes. It's...
Like, that's a feature? Okay. They do note that growth has been slowing just a little bit, but Snap's younger user base could be its secret weapon. And essentially what they're saying...
It's like the worst. They said that, it's like
I know.
Bernie Sanders' secret weapon was his young voter base.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They go, the pessimism mostly goes like this. Snapchat is mostly an app for teenagers. A lot of teenagers already use Snapchat, so there isn't much room for growth. Even worse, teenagers are fickle, so Snapchat user base could evaporate at any time.
Yeah, that's
true.
Super valid.
But what they were saying is that Snap is willing to experiment and try new stuff, and that's one of the cool things about them. And the younger customers are willing to try experimental products and features. So even though as those teenagers become young adults and are like, God, they become mature and want something stable, like there'll be new teenagers who want to try the new features, and so they're like, as long as they keep changing it and iterating it and making things better and rapidly evolving, like they'll be fine. To which I would argue no company in history has done. I know.
That's like saying this
part of it is the CEO just gets older,
right?
And they don't desire. I find that in myself. Like, I had an app today. We may or may not talk about it later today, where it was this I can't remember if I did it or not now. I can't find it. Anyways, it's this video app, and I tapped on it because at one time they were talking about it being available on the web or on the phone, and I just so happened to be on my computer when looking at it, and I clicked on the link, and it was like, download it on your phone. And I went, my phone's just way over there. I don't know. And like, I guess I don't want to know that bad. And you know what I mean? And like, so I feel it in myself, whereas I know for a fact, had I had this been 5 years ago, I'd be like, where's my phone?
Yeah.
I'm making this work, you know? I will do this. Part of it was all about like essentially TV, like turning YouTube and other places into television where it like has a set static set of channels and you just turn it on and it's playing. But instead of it being television, it's YouTube videos that's curated. And that's the idea, which is intriguing. Don't get me wrong. But it was just one of those, I find myself just naturally going, I like what I have and I like what I like. And he's going to do that too. And all of a sudden this fickle teenage base is going to go, oh, I don't know. They also think that they have a lot of room for revenue growth. And so part of it is they haven't totally figured out their advertising system yet. And once they do, they'll be making a lot more money per user. So you see a lot more ads on Snapchat. That's how I interpret that. To which, you know, teenagers love that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't
being force fed ads. That's
I like the ads on YouTube are annoying.
Oh yeah,
to say the least.
It's insufferable. I it's driving me crazy, man. And I honestly,
I've ditched a lot of ads. We're like,
You know, it's funny. I've skipped a lot of videos that start with 30-second unskippable ads. And 2 weeks ago, YouTube announced that as of next year, they once all their contracts for 30-second unskippable ads end, they won't be doing them anymore because people just stop watching the video. Like, don't want to know bad enough. And
that's crazy.
You know, and that's, you look at Snap, and it's like, that's, they're going to suffer all the same. They're not going to figure out a new clever way around all of these pit holes that are just pit holes. Their profitability is the same as everybody's profitability always. Super small margins by having an enormous user base that kind of sometimes pays attention to advertising, which is how Google makes money, which is how Facebook makes money, which is about how any of these web services that don't charge for their product make money. But
Matthew, they're a camera company.
I know. Well, and the thing is that
they sell cameras, because that's how camera companies would make money.
I know. And the thing is you can become a hardware company, and you can become successful as a hardware company, but you have to you have to do the software and the hardware in a really, really sophisticated way. GoPro is not solving that problem, and we can go through a list of companies that, like, every day hardware companies pop up. Hardware's
biggest problem.
Yeah.
Your biggest problem, like you said, it's not, I don't want to describe it. It's not the camera that's the big deal. Or GoPro is not your competition. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. Your competition is Microsoft, is going to be Google again. It will someday be Amazon, will someday be Facebook, will someday be Apple, all doing augmented reality.
I know.
That just so happens to have a camera on the lens that you interact with, and they've got chips inside that talk to your phone.
Yeah, and I sit there and I go, Apple is going to come out. I really do think that by the end of this year, if and when Apple pulls the trigger on their AR, and they are getting, like, they're dropping so many hints that if they don't do something in this year with AR, it'll just be like, okay, everybody needs to fire Tim Cook. This guy needs to shut his mouth and just, because it's driving me crazy. But, like, Tim Cook is hilarious in that he's so transparent. Like, he just...
Oh, we're very interested. That's very interesting space. He, it's so interesting. Yeah. Isn't it interesting that that's interesting?
And it's like...
Well, we don't renounce anything that we're doing, but it is interesting.
Okay? Yeah, and it's like the...
Please note my level of interest.
And he'll tell you exactly what he's interested in. We're not interested in goggles or glasses, but we are interested in AR on the iPhone in 2017. But we're not making that, but that's what we're interested in. And, like, he's just like,
yeah,
okay. Which is, like, all of his hints around the Apple Watch just, like, made it exceptionally clear that okay, we know what you're doing. This isn't that...
You're so bad at this.
I know. Well, but the thing is...
You can't give good hints.
Exactly. Yeah. Give me a hint.
I know we've ragged on this before, and I can't help it. But I'm like, go at least Steve Jobs route and tell me what's interesting about it. Give me the philosophy. Give me the thought process behind it. Help me buy into why the way you eventually do it is the right way to do it.
Exactly. Oh, my thing is, like, with okay, to bring it back around to Snapchat, though, and why Snapchat's dumb, it's because Apple's going to do that this year. Google already has many phones on the market that are building in augmented reality stuff.
Yeah, but phones are not on your face.
Yes, that is true. But you know what is on
your face? Except for Microsoft,
is, like, everything that Microsoft is doing. Oh, and what Facebook is doing in their hardware department. Because they have one of the most sophisticated hardware companies in the valley right now, trying to build one product, AR/VR headsets. Like, I just don't even, like...
Yeah, but the dark horse here is going to be Amazon, because they're the smart ones to go, low-hanging fruit, huh? Oh, just slap a camera on some glasses? We could sell them for $49.99. Yeah. All day long.
Yeah, and somebody in Amazon will be like, actually, what's really important is that they look good. And Bezos will be like, yeah, fine, okay, do that. Like, he's got no pride about it. He was like, I don't know what's cool. Hire somebody that knows what's cool. Like, Amazon succeeds in fashion all the time because they just hire people who have fashion, or they buy fashionable products. So they just, like, they don't even think about it. They just, like, okay, we know it's fashionable because we've got a bunch of data about it. and we'll just hire somebody who's on an up-and-comer. They'll design it. They'll put a camera on it. We'll sell it for $50. Okay.
We'll do one style design. It'll look cool. We'll add a bunch of different colors.
Yeah, done. Exactly. We'll send it to the moon. I don't know. Why not? Like, you see, and that's the piece of the puzzle that is actually, I didn't even think about, I would say that as like in a halfway joke. But that is such a real thing that they could do. Oh, snap. You took a picture of a backyard barbecue with your spectacles. That's cool. Because with the Amazon spectacles, we took a picture of the moon as we were going to the moon. And that's our advertising campaign. You know, like, God, jeez. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe this company is... I'm so excited because
I think what she said makes sense, is that everyone who was talking about it had an incentive to talk positive about it.
Yeah.
And so, so that's what you would, I mean, that's what you would expect. We'll see the real story next quarter.
Yeah.
And if they can manage that and, you know, that's okay. And hey, good for them, right? They made it this far. Their IPO.
Hey, yeah, like I said, you know what?
That's cool.
It would be it is a 1 in a billion achievement, and maybe not that. It's a 1 in 100 million achievement to become a billionaire on this scale. Like, he's made a successful company. Like, I don't criticize Snapchat because of what they've done. I criticize Snapchat because their leader is a cubris filled, like, just annoying character. Like,
he will either mature or get kicked out. It's easy. I mean, I don't know how he'll get kicked out.
I know, right?
In theory, the board still has power over that.
In theory. And, you know.
They still represent the owners, even if they have no voting power.
So, you know, we'll see. Congratulations on swindling people out of all their money, Snapchat. You did it. You know who's not swindling people out of their money? SpaceX and Amazon. Speaking of the moon. So a couple of big announcements in the...
My son, by the way, looks like Kid Gru. It's pretty funny.
Baby
Gru from the Super Bowl Me.
Okay.
And yeah. And so every time I see him, I'm like, I'm going to the moon. I don't know. I see him and I think that.
That's really funny.
That's how I roll. And now Jesse can't not see it, which is even better.
That's really funny. So SpaceX announced, Elon Musk announced this week that they are going to, in 2018, which is
five years
from now. No, wait, that's next year. They're going to launch a rocket using the Falcon Heavy. That will carry a capsule with two folk on it, and they are going to send that capsule to the moon, slingshot it around the moon, and bring it back to Earth. They haven't told us who those two people are, but we do know that they are super rich. And they came to him and said, hey, if we pay for it, you want to send us to the moon? And Elon Musk said, sure, why not?
That's so awesome.
Yeah, so they're going to fly to the moon, and they're not going to land, but they will presumably take a couple of videos, maybe some selfies, and...
maybe some Snaptograms.
Exactly. And, yeah, swing back around and come back to Earth. I have no idea who these people are. It's going to be a...
Yes.
Yeah. I've got a feeling that this...
I hope one of them... I hope one of them is Jeff Bezos. That'd be so awesome.
Well, see, the thing is it wouldn't be Jeff Bezos, because it turns out that Bezos has been in conversation with NASA and basically been saying, so for all of Obama's administration, the goal was to send a manned mission to Mars, figure out how to do that. And the goal was to do that by 2030. The Trump administration has sort of changed what they want to do there, and they're talking about how we actually want to go to the moon again and set up a moon base. Which is awesome.
Dude,
and
that's so awesome.
Yeah. And on the moon,
they can mess up everything, but if they get a moon base, I'll say successful administration.
You know what? I agree.
But I don't care.
Bezos being one of the things that's so much fun about Amazon, we've talked about this before, is that they're a company that has a core competency. They understand what they are, and anything that leverages that core competency, they're a game for. One of the things that they've becoming, one of their core competencies is being a global shipping company.
Yeah.
So why not make it Interstellar? So they have been talking to NASA for like a year, basically saying,
because that's the next logical step.
I know. They're like, look, y'all need to set up a moon base, and you're going to need regular deliveries there from Earth.
Naturally.
And guess what? Sign up for Amazon Prime, 2-day delivery.
Boom. So,
like, but this is not even a joke. Like, this is the whole Blue Origin project. That turns out that's the end game on this, is to launch a rocket repeatedly, a reusable rocket that will throw a payload into space and, yeah, bring it to the moon, land it on the moon, and then have those, you know, stuff come back, and so that you could build a sustainable colony, a sustainable base at the very least, on the moon. And then that moon base would act as a staging ground for a Mars mission. Because it is very expensive to build stuff on Earth and then put it into, as a complete product, put it into space. It is hard to build things it's much cheaper to take smaller pieces of equipment, put them into space, and then but building them in space is really difficult.
Assemble.
So that sweet balance that is sitting there going, might be the moon. Just send this stuff to the moon, like send big rockets to the moon piece by piece. Send rocket fuel. Like there's water, they know on the moon that they can turn into, that they can do electrolysis on, turn into rocket fuel. And so you could send the rockets for the Mars mission to the moon and the rocket manufacturing or the fuel manufacturing plants to the moon. And it would be way cheaper than putting the rocket fuel in space from Earth. And there's a couple other scale things that they can do. Also, you can have a moon base, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
And
let's not lose sight of
that. there's one particular resource on the surface of the moon that is really useful for fusion that we'd like to get our hands on. It's an isotope of helium that is really plentiful on the moon. So yeah, there's all sorts of advantages to it. So that's legitimately happening. It's not even a maybe we're talking about it, but especially now that the administration's all up for a moon base, it looks like this is how they're gonna do it. This is how they're gonna fuel these missions. And then on top of that, because Virgin can't help themselves, they're like, look, we've been trying to put people in space for a while with our Galactic 1 space shuttles, but obviously Elon's beating them to the punch. So they're like, look, there's still opportunities for us in space. So they started a subsidiary, and that subsidiary is going to be all about launching satellites into space. So you got Boeing, who last week announced, they were like, look, what SpaceX did for rockets, we think we can do for satellites. What Virgin is doing, Virgin's like, what SpaceX did for delivering stuff and people to the space station, we think we could do for satellites. Like the space race, the private space race is fully on. It's as exciting as can be. And the best part about it is NASA, everybody's like, oh, what's NASA think of this? Is NASA okay with Elon Musk shooting people to the moon? Are they going to want their territory stepped on? And NASA's like, look, we're trying to take pictures of the deep universe and send people to other solar systems. If y'all could figure out a way to make money sending stuff to the to the moon and we never have to deal with that, that'd be great. So, yeah, so NASA's like fully on board with all of this stuff. It turns out that SpaceX is going to have to get this cleared with the FAA to be able to launch people into space, which I think is the regulatory like aspect of this, I think, is kind of funny. I don't exactly know why, but it's just so weird. And so, yeah, turns out it's like, is it like a, it's kind of like an airplane ride. Nobody's ever done this before. It's kind of weird.
They're just going to want to make sure the proper safety protocols are in place, whatever that might be.
Right. See, that's the.
And honestly, they're going to call up NASA and go, so what would you say are the proper safety protocols?
Right, exactly. Well, the thing is that it's, and honestly, NASA, so the Falcon Heavy has to launch first. And the Falcon, they haven't actually finished building the rocket, but they are on schedule to launch astronauts to the space station before whatever this moon trip is going to be. So it's like, yeah, so this is, we're, you know, this it's all good. It's going to work itself out. It's going to be nice. And then, yeah, I'm excited, man. It's so cool.
I can tell. That is cool. Man, I wish I had $80 million sitting around so I could
get a ride. That's all it costs. A mere 80.
Evan Spiegel, he could go for it now.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not even going to say anything.
Oh, dude, Larry Page. It could be him.
I really am super curious to see who it is. Because, like...
Why should it just be some random...
Oh, I'm guessing it's...
a ridiculous amount
I'm of guessing money. It's Russian billionaires. might be Chinese billionaires, but...
I feel more Chinese than Russian, but...
I don't know. Those Russian billionaires get a little bit crazy. I'm going to...
Exactly. Russian cosmonauts, who knows? But
it's Mark Zuckerberg. Cool
too, if it was just like Mark Cuban. Give me a ride. That'd be so awesome. You could see it.
Yeah, you totally could see it. But yeah, I don't know. It's a good name. Mark Zuckerberg.
Going to the moon. Awesome. Awesome. Well, believe it or not, that wasn't the only thing that happened this week. Mobile World Congress happened. I know.
So did the. So we're not even going to touch on Game Developers Conference that happened this week. We don't even have an article. That's how big this week was. But yeah.
Yeah, we do. We will eventually talk very briefly about something that released last week that's game related. So the old is new. So Nokia officially launched their new old phone. BlackBerry, like we hinted at, has a phone that now has a keyboard in it. And as far as keyboards go, it looks pretty cool. The way that it works, you can actually swipe across the keyboard and it's like you're swiping on this phone screen, but or a big touchpad, maybe is the right way to say it. But anyways, Samsung did not introduce a phone.
Next week,
that's all they did. It was like their big conference was a teaser for their next big conference.
Yeah, which, you know, fair enough. I mean, they're big enough.
Yeah. 5G, it's coming.
In like, apparently. In like 2025. Elon Musk is going to make it to the Mars before 5G is enough.
No, it's set here for mass deployment in 2019. Yeah, okay, he'll make it to the moon for it. Anyways, there's things, it's kind of weird. So they have a bunch of companies who, it's marketing garbage, where they're talking about bezel-less phones. But what they mean is not a lot of bezel.
Right.
And I don't get, like, bezel-less means no bezel. It's not just the fact that you have, because I've seen Apple do this too, and it's kind of annoying. We're like, well, glass goes all the way.
Yeah.
There's no bezel. Like, that's not what I care about. Yeah. I want the screen,
yeah,
like, the pixels to go all the way. It's not about the glass. But anyways. So everyone was talking about that. And I think that was about it for Mobile World Congress. The big deal was the old retro stuff making a comeback.
Yeah. Well, okay, I would say this.
It's been around long enough now. How crazy
is that? I would. Yeah, that is kind of crazy. I would say this. I think the big deal was that nobody expected it. I don't actually think it's going to be like a big product category. Like, it seemed like something to talk about. Hey, this is novel. Well, the reason it's novel is because there's not really any money to make there, so nobody else is trying it. But like, this company, the company that's making the new old Nokia 3310 or whatever it is, they got nothing else going for them. They got a brand, and they're just trying to like really push. They licensed the brand, and they're just trying to push it as hard as possible. And it's the same with the BlackBerry. Like, is the keyboard really gonna all of a sudden make a comeback, or is there a tiny niche audience that's somewhat more interested in that than you know? And I don't know.
The review that I read on The Verge was like, it's cool, but it's not going to amount to anything.
Yeah,
like it's not mind blowingly awesome. They're like, I guess if you type a lot, sure, but probably not.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Well,
it's Android with a keyboard. That's
right, exactly. And you can get This goes back to, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Mobile phones are the worst possible size. And
you keep saying it. Keep saying
one
it.
One day it'll be true. but, yeah. I don't know, man.
Ugh. So, in other parts of the world, colder parts of the world, in Russia, they have successfully 3D printed a house.
I want one of these.
It's pretty cool. So it's a 400 square foot home, and it was built in 24 hours.
That's fast.
Just over $10,000
in materials.
That's every total. All right. Total cost.
It's pretty affordable.
So yeah, I guess materials, not labor,
right?
But your labor was a day.
Yeah, it's true.
Actually, the way that it's worded, I get a sense that it did the printing in a day, and then they still took them 3 weeks to do all the finishing.
Yeah, because
that's the sense that
I get. It's pretty nice. It's all painted and everything, and
it's got windows and it's furnished and it wasn't, and they don't make it look like. Yeah, I don't know.
So for those of you who are wondering how this all works, it's basically this, like, you get this base station that gets concrete pumped into it, and then it's got this arm that stretches out and can rotate around it. It works a lot like a normal 3D printer, and at the end is a nozzle that spits out a continuous flow of concrete. And so you build up layer by layer the walls and everything. And actually, it looks... Yeah, it works just like a small-scale plastic 3D printer. And then you have to install the windows and the doors, and you have to paint it and stuff. So there's more work involved to get all the fixturing in. But like you said, one of the worst parts of the process of actually building the structure is done automatically. And there's very little reinforcement that they're doing. They're adding some reinforcement as they go. But... you could probably have one person do it, or you could just get another robot to sort of figure out how to put those reinforcement pieces into it.
And eventually they will. What I thought was interesting about it is they're doing it, like I said, they're doing it in Russia, and they're doing it right now because it's cold. It needs to be close to freezing in order for it to work for some reason.
That is.
And they put a tent over it, but that's just to keep the snow off. But the temperature needs to actually be cold.
Huh.
Yeah, so we're not going to see it.
I wonder, I'll bet I know why it is. I know exactly why it is. It's because the concrete has to cure super quickly. So they're using, concrete is an exothermic reaction. It heats up as it cures.
Yeah, it does.
And so they're using stuff that is accelerating the curing factor, which is probably gets it super hot, super quick, and you have to keep the temperature very, very cold in order to... Yeah, that's probably exactly why that is. Yeah, interesting. That's very cool.
Yeah, it is very cool. I think for affordable housing type stuff, that's a cool alternative and promising tech. And that's something like I've been looking at it like, man, I feel like 3D printing would be great for housing, and there's so much automation that can happen there. And that's potentially.
Well, I think what we're starting to see is that it's just, you know, the very nascent beginnings of how this technology, this type of thinking about building stuff, can be applied to bigger and different scale problems. And
yeah, because that was the other big deal about this one. It was the first time that it had been done on site. Normally, there would be 3D printing modular stuff.
Yeah.
And so, the fact that it was actually
so they could this 3D printer.
That's part of why I was
saying. This 3D printer, they brought it in and out with a crane.
Yeah.
It's cool. Neat little project that they got going on there.
Yeah.
Nice job, Russia. No, but seriously, nice job. So you know who didn't do a nice job this week? Amazon had a bit of a kerfuffle when they accidentally crashed the internet.
Happens.
Exactly, from time to time. Wednesday, I think it was, bunch of services went down.
It was Tuesday.
Bunch of internet services went down. Including Is It Up or Not, the website, which is you know, things have really come off the rails when Is It Up isn't up. What happened was one of Amazon's biggest server farms went down in the Northeast, which basically handles all Amazon traffic on the East Coast is handled there, which includes all the traffic that is going from there to England across the Atlantic. It is a major hub, and a lot of web services are hosted on it, websites, web services, all sorts of stuff, including assets that are used in the Amazon console. So when that server went down, the Amazon console went down as well, or portions of it. So this is like a really big deal, and everybody really wanted to know, okay, so what the heck happened? Because it turns out, you know, this is an issue. And what's crazy is there's a lot of web services that were being hosted that just went down completely, but companies like Apple use that server farm as a part of their content distribution network, both Apple and Netflix. And because it's just a content distribution network, what that means is that if you're on the East Coast and you request to download a movie from Apple, your request goes to Apple. Apple verifies the request, then sends that information to that server, the Amazon server, and then you actually download the movie from the Amazon server. Well, since that server wasn't up, if you're on the East Coast, that request gets routed to a live server somewhere else, like in Asia or on the West Coast or whatever. And so all of a sudden, all of the traffic of the East Coast, which is a huge number of people, was getting routed across the country, which means that A, is a lot of, like, there is a huge speed problem for everybody on the East Coast, because their ping rate suffered for any of these services. And anybody on like the West Coast was now competing for traffic with the East Coast. That's a big problem for a lot of people. So the big question was, what happened? And Amazon put out a blog post a couple days later, basically saying, hey, this is the summary of what was going on. So they... the Amazon simple storage
did not service, make this readable, did I know. They? Just huge blocks of text.
The Amazon simple storage service S3 team was debugging an issue causing the S3 billing system to progress more slowly than expected. An authorized S3 team member using an established playbook executed a command, which was intended to remove a small number of services from one of the S3 subsystems and is used by the S3 billing process. So they basically turn off a program a small chunk of the programs. Unfortunately, one of the inputs to the command was entered incorrectly, and a larger set of server was removed than intended. So they added an extra zero or two. Something like that. We don't exactly know, but that's the implication. The server was inadvertently removed from two other S3 subsystems. One of the subsystems, the indexing system, basically manages all of...
system is not a one you don't want to...
This is a problem. Basically, it was how do we keep track of everything we're doing? That system that is like the core tracking program went down. And when that went down, a bunch of services started to time out. And when those services started to time out, all those servers said, hey, something's wrong. Maybe we should shut down.
I wonder how long all that happens. Like, when he hits enter, is this something where it's like 3 hours later you go, something's weird? Or is it like 3 seconds later you go, oh, no.
I'll bet it was 15 minutes. I'll bet it was, maybe not. Well, I'll bet it was 15 minutes before they realized, like, everything had come off the rails.
Here we go. It says it was 9:37 a.m. And then it says, by 12:30...
They had everything. They had stuff coming back online.
Okay.
So it was
pretty fast.
Yeah, so basically what happened was, the placement subsystem, removing a significant portion of the capacity caused each of these systems to require a full restart. And that was the real problem. So basically, the whole thing didn't shut down. It just stopped working. And the only way to get them all working again was to hit restart. And that's the next problem. While these subsystems were being restarted, S3 was unavailable to service requests, which is a huge problem. Other AWS services regions that rely on S3 for storage, including the S3 console and a whole bunch of other stuff, didn't work, blah, 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 blah. But what the real issue was is that Amazon has grown a bit since the last time they restarted all these systems. So they didn't really know how long it would turn to turn all these applications back on that needed to be running on these servers. Evidently, it took a lot longer than they were expecting. Like, a lot longer.
This kind of reminds me of, like, I wish this was exciting as, like, Jurassic Park. But that's kind of how I feel. I imagined in my head it went, but it probably wasn't.
I think for the people there, it probably felt
on your butts.
Yeah. Exactly. I think for the people there, it probably felt a bit like that. I appreciate that they did not name the person who was responsible. Probably would be a big problem, but yeah, that's how you crash the internet as a dude.
That guy won't be fired. He's learned his lesson.
Yeah, right. And what they said is they've decided that they're going to modify that line of code that he did. They're going to modify that tool so that basically it has a "Are you really sure?" ? before you have to hit okay to. And they're also going to make it so that as you take down like large chunks of the servers, it takes a lot longer so that there was time to, if you realize something has gone wrong, there's time to actually stop it before it gets that far off the rails. So
that makes sense. That's
crazy. I know. Love it.
Nobody in the from that group up the chain got no work done that day.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably the rest of the week.
Yeah.
That was just like, whatever meetings and whatever plans had happened for Bezos, canceled.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, what's he do? Nothing, but I'm watching the dashboard.
Yep, just
asking questions.
Just making
can I get you any water? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Fix it. Oh, so crazy. So crazy. Well, technology continues along. I thought this one was pretty interesting. JP Morgan, not a camera company, has been investing pretty heavily in software, trying to kill jobs. I mean, trying to make people more productive. And so, interestingly, this new thing that they're talking about is this new, it's an artificial intelligence software tool that I think we're going to see more and more of this. We talked about it once a few weeks back. It was talking about how you could create an AI to read your lease agreement, and then you could ask it questions, and it would be able to answer them back to you based on what it read in your lease agreement, which is cool. This is similar-ish, where it's a learning machine that can parse financial deals. So when a company writes a loan, I guess, for it, specifically like a commercial loan, what'll happen is now this cloud network thing that they call COIN, which stands for something I don't remember anymore. It's like two words thrown together. What it does is it can read through all of it to understand what the loan is doing and what all the different parts are, and making sure that it stays legal and does all that other stuff. It does it in a matter of seconds, and this was something that took a staff of lawyers, where they spent as a group 360,000 hours working on things like this, just reading commercial loan agreements to make sure that they were good to go.
Huh.
And now it'll read it in seconds.
That's
and give summaries and stuff like that. So, which they're like, our lawyers hated doing this, so no one feels bad about this. I'm like, dude, you know you let go of a couple people because of this, or you're not hiring new people because of it. So, you know, whatever. JP Morgan is one who they're investing hard, or big time, however you want to say it, into technologies similar to this. And so they're working on other things as well in it. But that's kind of their newest, latest one. I think it's kind of cool. It's this idea of, don't just scan in information. Have these machines read the information, figure out what it's saying, and then just let me ask, like, search, essentially do a smart search for it. What did it say about this? And I would tell you that. It's funny. I was today, I was looking up what someone's payment was supposed to be to me. And I was like, all right, let me go grab the lease agreement. Let me go see what this is supposed to say. You know, it'd be sweet to just have a chatbot be like, hey, how much does What's-Your-Face owe me next week?
Right. That'd be nice. That is awesome. I like that a lot. That's neat. Oh man. And I think the crazy part about it is that this is a pretty sophisticated software tool that's not coming from Google or Apple or Microsoft or Amazon. It's, you know, the reality is that these sorts of really sophisticated tools are making their way into non-tech companies. You know, you got a big...
Yeah, and what's interesting is actually they visited Apple and Facebook like 3 years ago to understand how their developers worked. And that was when they went, we can do this. Yeah. We can figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're using... Officially, the buzzwords are machine learning and big data. It's nice because it's in a private platform and things like that. But they're thinking about now, like, dude, we could sell this to others. Like, I guess, like, BlackRock is one where, like, they've asked them, they're like, this would be actually really useful to us.
Could we borrow your system?
Yeah, but I thought that was cool. Just another neat use of how software is slowly, slowly, slowly eating the world.
Yeah, it is, man. It really is. There's a bunch of stuff this week about that, just like thought pieces and stuff where I was seeing just about how this argument that I've made, contrary to the argument that you make about the automation and how, what if this is different? If this time it's, you know, if this industrial revolution is truly something different. I don't know. It's interesting. I also watched a lot of computer file videos this week on AI and like all of their AI stuff on YouTube. It's a great channel. Check it out. Talking about computer concepts and stuff. And what I learned from that is that we are either on the cusp of one of the breakout of a artificial super intelligence that's going to kill us all, or we're 100 years from even being close to something that approaches a general intelligence. Like it's not a slam dunk. Like these sorts of application built artificial intelligence that help with specific tasks obviously are going to become more and more sophisticated, but like a general intelligence, we have no idea when it's coming or what it's going to be like. it is interesting. But we're working real hard at making it. And the crazy part is when they say that, it's sort of like watching somebody play chess, who's a lot better than you are. It's like, we can guess where this game is going. That person's going to win. But you can't understand why it's going there because you can't see the complexity of these intermediary moves. And that's part of the challenge of developing intelligence. It's like, you know, we can kind of guess where it's going, but all the necessary steps to get there, it's really hard to ease out, which is why we've been predicting since the 60s that we were less than a decade away from a general intelligence. Anyways, so speaking of artificial intelligences and companies using them, there's been a little bit of talk this week about the future of machine comprehension, and Amazon at least announced something like that. Amazon is working on voice ID for Alexa. So the idea there being right now, I could walk into your house and say, hey, Alexa, order me 7,000 rolls of toilet paper. And since it's hooked to James's account, it would order him.
It wouldn't, because it can't hear you.
But but I mean, if I were in your house, you know, like they, Alexa can't tell the difference between users right now.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
So anybody in the house can order. And it's been a problem for when kids figure that out and they start to order stuff. Or
I was telling someone the other night, I was like, Eleanor better make that first purchase count. She gets one. And then I'm putting the pin in.
Yeah. And,
you know, I'll let the first one
go. I'm going to teach her Ferrari. Say Ferrari. It's really easy.
Teach her Tesla. I'll let her keep
that's
that
okay.
One.
Good point. look, Jesse, I'd return it, but that's going to be such a hassle.
it's already here.
Kind of a cute story, really.
Tell all your mom friends.
Exactly. So
we'll put a Snapchat in on.
Yeah. But yeah, so the idea here being that you'll actually be able to identify different voices and different users, so you can associate it to different accounts. You can give give preference so that like you would have the ability to buy stuff, but other people would only have the ability to.
So like on my smart scale, when I step onto it, it knows it's me and goes, oh, and here, and then it can show you my trends and stuff over time, because it's like, we know it's you because you're that weight category.
You've got a particular vital signs and we can identify you. And so, yeah,
same idea.
Yeah. So, then like the next day, Google was like, oh yeah, so are we.
Oh, yeah. That old trick.
Exactly. So, yeah, kind of that's the direction that your home voice kits are going right now, is the idea that, they want to get to the point where they can get on board with that. Alexa, they were also talking this week about how, like, one of the next big goals for Alexa is to get you to be able to communicate between Alexas and different platforms. So send texts, send emails, use it as an intercom in your house, stuff like that.
Intercom.
Yeah, because the idea is you have these little speakers everywhere. So I thought that was pretty neat. But, you know, Google, once again, not to be outdone. Yeah.
Hey, let's do it. Exactly.
So it's all that's the direction we're heading. But Apple kind of, I read an interesting article about the basically arguing that as cool as this stuff is, and it is definitely cool, Apple actually has a little bit of an advantage in at least one big important feature when it comes to voice comprehension in Siri, and that's that. Google's assistant has really two languages that it can speak. It can speak basically English and German.
English.
Amazon, similar. Doesn't really have it. Yeah, doesn't really have a big language gamut.
Oh, I don't know.
Siri's got like 20 like full featured languages, and so I've been studying. Huh. I've been studying Italian. And I, so my, am with my girlfriend, and we, just for the, because we were texting each other and it was constantly yelling at me, being like, dude, you're spelling everything wrong. So I added the Italian keyboard without thinking about it. And all of a sudden, like, I had no idea how sophisticated Apple's ability to A, figure out whether you're talking in Italian or English on the fly. Like, it just has both autocorrects going all the time, which is pretty neat. I don't have to switch between them. But
wow. Office, my, for some reason, the default for Word on my work computer was UK English.
That's annoying.
I don't know why. And it kept telling me, like, I was like, writing about color. And it was like, no, that's not how you speak. And I was like, I'm pretty sure it is. Or honor was the other word. And I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure that's
the
right.
Color of honor.
And, but I saw that, and it only gives me one choice. So that's interesting that it does both.
Yeah, and it's it does both on the fly, and the cool part is that dictation stuff totally works. And I was with Italian, which Italian is not a super popular language. It's not like Mandarin, which is should be table or Spanish, which should be table stakes for companies like this. But like, Apple's got it handled.
So you just add that keyboard and it can, like, essentially you added that language to
pretty much
phone. And it's not just you have to choose one or the other. It can do both.
Yeah. It's really, I was really surprised at how sophisticated it is. And like I said, Apple's got a major advantage in that it's not just English and Italian.
Yeah, for now. Well, I mean, Google's eventually going to put their translator thing on it, and they'll have 80 languages in a day.
Okay,
Amazon's kind of up creek.
You're absolutely right, but until they do that, Apple's got a huge advantage. I mean, it's
fair enough.
We've been knocking Apple quite a bit for their not keeping up in the area of AI, and I still think they deserve it.
They're just focusing in the wrong areas.
I want to give credit where credit's, when credit is due.
Okay, fair enough. I just want a garage door opener. Okay, like, go talk to a garage door opener company and say, "Hey, enable Siri, please." That's all I want. I haven't made one because I don't think I could figure out the security piece, and someone
else can do it. Yeah, that one's okay. Garage door opener. See all HomeKit enabled products.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Garage door opener. The Cambridge Smart Garage Hub announced. Oh, these are all announced. None of them are actually selling. That's really not good enough for Apple.
Yeah.
They've got a whole bunch of devices on this list. This list looks really impressive.
They just don't use it themselves.
Yeah. Well, they all live in San Francisco and they don't own cars. That was dismissive. Because they mostly live in Cupertino and they have really nice cars.
Let's see here. Here's a new one. January 4th. 2017. So this is only a couple months old. Chamberlain, who, like, they're on top of it when it comes to this stuff. They say they're bringing it to their MyQ garage door openers this year. Oh, finally, this year.
Yeah.
Mm. Whatever. Super annoying. Just... Oh, they announced it at CES. That means...
Oh, yeah. That's... That really is as meaningless can be. But...
Super annoying. Anyways. Cool. Languages. That's neat.
Come on now. So in the VR space, LG announced this week that they've been working with with Valve, who had worked with HTC to develop the Vive headset, and LG has been working with Valve as well. They now have a headset, puts them in direct competition with HTC's headset, and doing similar stuff where it's got the controllers and yeah, so it's just that market's expanding and Valve's getting into it. Should be pretty exciting. I like it.
Dude, that's so exciting. So speaking of competition, we have something new. So I was I was driving Friday morning at 5:30 in the morning to go play Ultimate Frisbee because I'm weird. And there was a line of people, probably 30 people deep, outside of Fred Meyer. Friday morning, 5:30. I saw one tent for sure. You know, and at that hour you're a little like, you're not quite there, probably shouldn't be driving type of thing. You're like, what the, and I'm like, what in the world is going on? And I'm like, okay, it's got to be a bunch of geeks because those are the only people who line up. And I'm thinking, like, Mobile World Congress, they announce stuff. They don't really start selling stuff. And really, there's only one phone company that generates lines. Who would it be? And I went, oh, what? We are now in March, and I believe Nintendo said they're releasing their Switch in March, beginning March 3rd. And I looked at the date and went, ah, that's totally what it is. And I was like, I want it. And then kept driving. Because I assumed, even if I got in line, which I wasn't going to, but even if I did, they probably wouldn't have enough. So, did you get one?
A Nintendo Switch? I did. Not. I didn't. I did not is the word I was looking for.
Okay. You did not get one. Are you going to get one once they're back in stock?
Remember how I was talking about that really cool 3D printer that I'm super excited that I own now? You want to know how much
That's your
way. So you want to know how much it cost?
It costed one Nintendo
Switch. Cost about one Nintendo Switch. So at least for the time being, I'm going to continue to print off omnidirectional wheels and consider that as good as playing Zelda Call of the Wild.
Well, according to the reviews, essentially, if they had to put it into a single sentence, would be the Nintendo Switch is a very solid work in progress.
Yeah, that sounds...
I'm like... So apparently, from a portable gaming device standpoint, like, it's good. It's great. Like, the screen's awesome. The controllers feel good. Life's great for a portable thing. As a home console, like, probably not. The graphics aren't anywhere near Xbox and PlayStation. The Pro controller is an extra $70. Everyone's like, yeah, it's like that. Like, in some ways, it's like a retro GameCube is how people are describing it. Like, that's how they...
The controller?
No, well, the controller and just the graphics in general. Yeah, the package, if you will. Let's see. Battery life is only like 2.5 hours if you're playing Zelda, which is like the only game that you can play besides 1-2-3 Switch. So, which they're all like, it's not great. Interestingly, though, it charges over USB-C. But here's the funny part. If you plug the Switch into an Apple, like, MacBook or MacBook Pro or something like that, the Switch charges the MacBook.
That's... I don't even know. That's... That's annoying.
Yeah. I would imagine. Oh, yeah, super funny. Let's see here. Let's the Joy-Con controllers. From what I understand, everyone's like, eh, there's certain ways, like attached to the tablet, like it works great. If you take them off and you hold them individually in your hands, like it's pretty good. If you try to put them together without the little thing in the middle, like miserable. If you turn them sideways, miserable. And again, the $70 Pro controller, like yeah, it feels like a regular controller. It feels all right. So that's kind of, and apparently there's some sort of wireless connectivity issues that all the testers had, or a lot of the testers had, and so they're like, we just don't know. As we've talked about, if you like Zelda, or Zelda's pretty much like the only game that they're launching with right now, and like this could be a huge issue, and they say like you have to be able to be willing to play that for a couple months before you get anything else. Which they think is possible because apparently, like, the land of Zelda is, like, twice the size of Skyrim's.
Whoa.
Yeah, which makes me want to play it even more. And so, because that was pretty big, right?
Yeah. Pretty big is a pretty, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah, so they were like, so you might actually spend a couple months just playing Zelda. Like, that's possible. Huh. Given just how big it is, and they were like, if the entirety of it maintains the beauty and the variety and all the other cool stuff that's happened just in the first few hours of them playing, like yeah, this game could be legitimate. Oh man, I want it so bad. Ah, oh, why you gotta tell me these things? No one has gotten to try their online capabilities, but we all know they're gonna stink. So you know, whatever. And like one of them, they're like, here's a question: since it doesn't have a web browser. Let's say that you go to Starbucks or some public Wi-Fi place that has that page that pops up that's like, please accept our agreement to play. Like, how is that going to work?
Yeah, I know.
Like, can we just...
Well, it does have a web browser. It just, you're not supposed to be able to access it. And okay, which is yeah. Which means that they recognize that that's a potential issue and they're working on it. No, no, it's not.
Yeah. That's probably true.
I think the answer here is that they... That in classic Nintendo fashion, they built one really great game, and they don't build four great games at the same time. They build, you know, they've got a couple in the works, but they come out one at a time. They nailed the hardware in a way that's satisfactory for most people, and they didn't finish the software, which is very Nintendo-esque, and... You know, it is what it is, man.
I want one. Did I say that?
You know, my biggest problem with it is, and the reason, my hesitation and why it will probably be a very long time for me to ever get one, if I ever get one, it's because I kind of want it all, man. I'm going to want a nicer controller. I'm going to want the little cradle. I'm going to need a battery pack so I can play it on an airplane for longer than 5 hours. And it's like, this $300 game set console is going to cost me $700.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just going to be, it feels more expensive than it should be because of that. But you know, hey, save up your pennies and get it when it's time. I don't have any kids, so I can justify it.
I do have kids.
You'd still try to justify it.
I'm going to try to just tell Jesse enough times, like, oh, this is really cool, and I might get it in October as a birthday
nice.
Present. That's what I'm aiming for, because I think I would struggle to justify it otherwise. Yeah. Which, unfortunately, her birthday's after mine, so I can't set the precedent.
Yeah.
Of course, then I would just get it myself and then get her a normal present, but anyways. Oh, it's a good thing she doesn't listen. So, so speaking of entertainment, we're just going to keep it rolling here real quick here. So, I don't know if you saw this, but YouTube now has a $35 pay for TV.
You see,
$35
per month. Not exactly that I see it that's important. It's, does Apple see it? Do you see this, Apple? Do you see that this is how you build a service? Using web broadcaster or traditional media and turn it into an online service for $35 a month. Apple. Why is Apple so bad at doing this sort of stuff that they're supposed to be really good at?
Because their leader is not fantastic.
Okay, and yeah.
He's great at operations, not at seeing this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and then he put Eddie Q in charge of it, who seems to be an even bigger buffoon. But
man, he hasn't even figured out how to fully button his shirt.
I know. I was going
to
say, his shirt.
Why would you put him in charge of
his shirt game, though? Yeah, he's really...
Yeah, but the idea is it's different than YouTube Red. It's, which... Man, there are some days where I'm like, man, I would pay to get rid of my ads.
That's what they're hoping for, specifically.
Yeah, so it's a bunch of them. It's all the big four broadcasters, Fox, ABC, CBS, and NBC, along with some of their related channels. For example, Fox News, ESPN, and Bravo. And the ESPN one is interesting. Now they will, how do they say it? You won't be able to watch like NFL games necessarily because of certain rules, but like you'll be able to watch pretty much everything else from them. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Bunch of channels.
I like.
Apparently there are other companies who are offering similar things, but YouTube gives you unlimited DVR or unlimited space for the DVR, but then you have like 90 days or something to watch them, which I'm like, man, that's not bad.
Yeah, I think the neat part about it is basically what it is it's a cable without cable, right? And there are certain properties that are missing. Disney, that...
What are you talking about?
What do you mean, what am I talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about? They got the Disney Channel and Disney Kids or Disney Junior. Yeah.
There's something they're missing.
You kidding me? They got ABC, got ESPN, they got the Disney Channel. Oh, yeah. Like, no, they've somehow got them all in. Now they are missing like HBO, but who cares? You get the separate app for that. What was the one I'm thinking of? Like Viacom, right? Their AMC. Oh, dude, I love AMC. Return of Classic Movies. That'd be great.
Huh. I don't remember who it was. There's so many. There's so many who's big that they. Oh yeah. They don't have CNN. Don't have CBS. Don't have MTV. Who cares about MTV?
No, they have. I thought they had CBS. They've got CBS. They don't have MTV though.
Yeah, whatever. It's funny. I mean, this is the product that I would actually be. I mean, I already get cable because my roommate likes it, but if I didn't have cable, this is what I would sign up for, something like this. And I prefer to just work with my Apple TV. But
yeah, maybe now that they've done it, Apple can follow.
Yeah, and it just seems so easy. Why is this so hard? I like the idea of being able to watch sports all the time. That's exciting. Probably commercials. There's probably a lot of commercials. God, I hate commercials.
It's regular TV. So, yeah.
Commercials are the worst. That's always... It's every time I just think, oh, I'm watching TV. And then commercials start, and I'm like, no, I'm done. I've had enough.
That's so true. When I go to hotels now, I don't turn on the television. It's the worst.
I turn on the TV, and I unplug the HDMI cord, and I plug in my... Wow. Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, I don't watch TV there either. It's insufferable.
That's what I should do, because I have an HDMI to lightning
connector. Yeah, definitely. Plug your TV or plug your iPhone in, man. Watch it. It's awesome. I like it. You can plug it in over USB-C, maybe, on your iPhone 8. So the rumor mill has been churning out. And I just want to put this out there because everybody's being dumb. And they were saying that the rumor was that Wall Street Journal was reporting that the iPhone 8 is going to be powered by USB-C. And everybody was like, finally, Apple's going to get on board with the standard. And I took a look at it and I was like, or they're just going to make, their Walwart's USB-C. And right. Which, why wouldn't they do that? They'll stick with the Lightning for at least a little bit longer. So, yeah, I wanted to bring this up because I feel like anybody who thinks that is just being dumb. They're not thinking Apple-y. But
have you noticed the lack of other rumors, by the way? Like, we're in March, and last year, March, they unleashed new iPads. Have you heard anything or read anything at all about it?
I've heard the soft rumor of upgraded iPads.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I think you're right. But I've noticed, and I don't know if it's just because we all have like super high expectations for the next iPhone, and therefore that's what we all care about. And maybe that'll give them an opportunity to actually surprise us because we're all looking over here. But we're coming around the corner here of them doing another update, and like no one's talking about anything. There's no rumors whatsoever. So either A, what they're doing isn't that interesting, or B, which is a problem we've talked about before, they are also focused on making sure they nail the next iPhone that they're not focusing on anything else.
And could it
and either one works for me.
Could it be both? I think what they're doing is they're just going to do an upgrade to the iPhone or to the iPads. It's just going to be
Hey, I'm okay with that because I don't want mine to feel obsolete a year.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what new they would add to it that would make it really. I mean, they're clearly not going down the force touch like route, so they might expand new.
Which makes no sense to me because it's super annoying that I don't have it on my.
I know. It's actually, once you kind of get used to it, it's really useful.
Yeah,
but come on with a new pencil. That's the biggest thing I've heard is that they want to update the pencil, maybe make it more stylish. I know. Okay. Yeah, like you said, unexciting. I think they're so.
I've just noticed that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting that you pointed out. I've heard the WWDC motors have started to rev a little bit. The early. Like signs that WWDC is coming and new software, that's exciting. But that's because they announced the tickets, so it's like, oh yeah, that's right, this is coming down the pipe. And but it's all in reference to what's the iPhone 10 gonna be or 8 or whatever. No iPad news, no Mac Pro news. I really hate liking this company. But you know what a company that I really like liking is? The Raspberry Pi Company. They announced a new Raspberry Pi this week. It's called the Zero W. And the Zero was a $5 Raspberry Pi. It was very, very, very... The original one was very bare bones. Weak processor. Huh. It had USB... B or like the mini USB, it had mini HDMI, but it was tiny. It's tiny form factor, and it cost a mere $5. So it was like just flying off the shelves, and it ran Linux. I mean, it's like it's a full blown computer still. But as like an embedded product, it was had a lot of advantages. The problem was is that unless you were doing something fully embedded that didn't need any wireless connection, expanding it so that you could do... Expanding it to be able to do wireless stuff was kind of defeated the point because you had to get a USB hub so that you could plug in your Wi-Fi dongle or your Bluetooth dongle or both, which took up a lot of space and kind of defeated the whole purpose. So... the Raspberry Pi organization realized that was a deficiency of the board, and they fixed it. So they, with the Raspberry Pi Zero W, and this thing is same form factor as the Zero, twice as expensive, but it comes with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, all in the board package, which is amazing. Wow. It is amazing. It is a full-blown $10 computer with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. I cannot express how exciting that is. Like, I really like the Raspberry Pi 3 because it's actually a powerful computer in a tiny form factor. But the Zero is just an amazing feat of not just their engineering, but just sort of like all engineering everywhere. Just the state of the industry and what we've become capable of is pretty remarkable. And part of what's so impressive about it is the fact that this isn't Google or Apple that's doing this. It's the fact that it's a small UK group of engineers. You know, it doesn't require the engineering prowess of a billion-dollar company to be able to achieve these sorts of things. Yeah,
figure out how to make it
which is what's so impressive. So, really cool, exciting. You can't buy one because they've been sold out, and if it's anything like the original Pi Zero, it'll be sold out for the next year and a half. So, you can buy one for 6 times the price on eBay.
Well, still not horribly priced. Well, finally, this is it. This is our last thing. Just kind of want to mention it. Since we ragged on Uber so much last week, Uber CEO Travis Kalanick has come out and said, "I need to grow up." Especially after a video surfaced of him yelling at another driver and essentially telling the cab driver was driving him, figured out who he was because people were talking to him about Uber and he was, you know. And so he was like, "Hey, man, how can you keep dropping my fares?" Which I'm like, that's an aggressive move. That's an aggressive move to make when you're just the cabbie. You know, that's not professional. But he does not react
well. Yeah, I was going to say, I think that everything you read, it's like this, the stories right now is not looking good for Uber and the CEO. So everybody jumped on the headline of, you know, Travis being a prick and how, like, this is another example of it. I actually listened to the video and I was like, I would have reacted. No, I should say this. I would not have wanted to react the way that Travis did. I might have.
He was fine right up until the very end. You know, he was trying to defend it, trying to talk about it, trying to genuinely understand it. It was definitely a confrontational type of, like, you know, like, this guy was trying to ask him a question and point out a thing, and Travis was like, "No, I will defend this to the
death." Yeah, no.
But, I mean, he started out at least okay, and then when he attacked his manhood, that's when you're like, alright, that's cross the line there, buddy.
Yeah,
you know. Can't do that. Just gotta go, "I understand, and thank you for your feedback." Well,
yeah, that's, I was gonna say, that's the thing, is that it's
not a, some people gotta learn to get their stuff together. Good day, sir! Good day!
it was completely out of line by the driver, I would say. But as the CEO of AIM.
But dude, could you imagine if, like, I don't know, you find out that you've got, let's imagine somewhere, somehow you're given a ride to the CEO of Snap.
Yeah, Evan Spiegel decides that he needs
to. You got Evan Spiegel in the car with you. And you're a little like, dude, what the heck? You're a camera company, really? Like, how in the world could you act professional in that type of, you know what I mean? Like, I get it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Besides, he's not an employee. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whatever, he could say and act however he wants.
He's completely allowed to.
He's just a contractor.
You see, the thing is, and as much fun as it is,
he's not an employee. He doesn't have a handbook. Here's your reputation for.
Yeah, I'll be totally honest, by the way. Like, I am not ashamed to admit this. If I ever met Evan Spiegel in real life, I'd be super nice to him. Like, oh yeah. I would. He's a billionaire, so, you know, he's got that going for him. And maybe that makes me a coward that I'm willing to make fun of him behind his back on our podcast. But I just, I wouldn't, I don't.
You had better hope that I'm not that weird.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I should say that. Yeah, and if I would be honest, I would not be a suck up. If it came up and my opinion was contrary, but the thing is that at least when you're face to face with somebody like that, if I'm going to say, hey, you're wrong, like, I have to be coming from a place of being able to back it up. And I just wouldn't be able to in the face of it. He'd be like, well, I am the billionaire CEO of the successful camera company, so who's right about it being a camera company? And I'd be like, but you just wait until it stops working for you and you just spend your whole life as a 100 millionaire. Like, it would be hard for me to... I'm not that sort of person, so it's easy for me to look at like this Uber driver and be like, dude, what is wrong with you? Like, I know you're upset, but what'd you do with your life, man? It's not his fault. I don't know.
I'm with you. that was my opening line, right? Wow, this guy had some gumption.
I know.
Okay. Can't believe you just did that. If I was Travis, I would have just been quiet, listen, and then unceremoniously deleted his account.
Yeah.
Later. Which there's probably some privacy rule.
Well, yeah, but that wouldn't have stopped him.
Yeah, that's right.
It's Uber.
Dude, there's got to be some sort of, like, thing in the clause that you accept that's like, we have the right to terminate anyone at any time for any reason. I mean, I would have that if I was. But anyways, there you go. So, a couple things happened, and quite the week. Wow, quite the week. So thanks for sticking through, and thanks for joining us. And let's see, we're listening to episode 284. So thanks. Don't forget, you can check out all the show notes with all the links at furloughbros.com. And if you'd like to get those show notes sent directly to you, you can. All you have to do is sign up. It's easy. And finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. If you would also like to contribute, and we would love it, because it would let us keep doing this and other things, we have four different ways that you can do it. You can become a fanboy, a nerd, a junkie, or a maven. And they each have their own different levels of rewards. Again, you can check all that out at furloughbros.com to see how you too can become a patron. So, I am James Furlough, and my brother, who can regenerate and never dies, but probably will die, because that's the way this is, feels like it's going in the movie, with three claws, or razors, I think is what you said. Anyways, he is Matthew Furlough, and so, we will talk next time. Thank you.